Let ring the bells. Sabine studied her face in the mirrors from every angle, no fewer than 9 maids fluttering nervously about her. Frayed with powder and brush, Matello with comb and scissors, Liddy with a mouthful of pins, May with 4 different colours of thread woven around her fingers. Aside from a wrinkle or two about the eyes, and unless great Eos could turn back time for her, there was no help for that, she saw no opportunity for improvement. Perfection, said Zuri with the quiet pride of a painter placing the last brushstroke on a masterpiece. Hardly. Savine took one last surreptitious sniff of pearl dust, then carefully brushed clean the rims of her nostrils. But as close as we'll get under the circumstances. She had never worked so hard as she had in preparation for this event. There were a great many things that fell short of her standards, but then she had only been given a few days to prepare for 714 guests, and at this particular wedding she was not the only bride. Indeed, the thing that fell furthest short of her standards was the other one. Isolde Dancasper, soon to be Isolde Dan Isha, was waiting at the vast inlaid doors, breathing faster than an untried soldier about to meet a charge of horse. She was very young and rather chinless, with a scattering of freckles across her nose and big brown eyes that looked constantly on the point of brimming with tears.
"I never saw such a dress," she murmured as Liddy stooped to make some tiny adjustment to Savine's train.
"My dear, you're so kind, but it really was thrown together."
And it had been in 6 days. By 2 corset makers, a goldsmith, 3 dealers in pearls, an expert in working with them, and 9 seamstresses going through the night by candlelight.
"You look magnificent too."
Isolde blinked down doubtfully at herself.
"Do you think so?"
"I do."
Savine did not. Isolde's dress was a triumph of optimism over taste and accentuated all her worst features. But its inferiority to her own would be so utterly obvious to anyone watching, there was no point in saying so.
"That's such an unusual necklace. Runes."
Savine stretched out her throat as Zuri gave an infinitesimal tweak to the way they sat. Everyone here had diamonds, after all, but these gave her a dash of the exotic. She was the least superstitious person alive, but they felt like good luck somehow.
"They were a gift from..."
An old lover of my husband's did not sound quite right, so she settled for...
"A friend from the north."
"Will your parents be here?"
A more complicated question than Isolde probably realised, since one of Savine's fathers was dead and the other not actually her father. She settled for
both of them.
"You're so lucky. I have hardly any family left. My uncle died before I was born on campaign in the north, then my father last year and my mother a few months after. I never had any siblings."
Leaving her, no doubt, with quite the inheritance. Savine began to divine what made her so irresistible to Lord Isha.
"I only wish one of them had lived to see this."
"I am sure they would have been proud,"
and somewhat relieved to be rid of her. Savine took her gently by the shoulders. "Today you will gain a whole new family. I know your husband to be a good man." She suspected him of being a devious scorpion. "And from the way he talks, he is very much in love with you." Isolde blinked up at her.
"Do you think so?"
Savine did not.
"How could it be otherwise?"
she asked, chucking Isolde under the chin and making her smile.
"Zuri, could one of the girls help Isolde with her powder?"
"Blessed is she who gives succour to the needy, Lady Savine."
"I'm sorry," croaked out Isolde as May attended to her face. "I don't mean to be a burden."
"Don't be ridiculous," said Savine. "I should be the one apologising for stealing half of your big day, and with so little notice. It has been quite the whirlwind."
"It's good to have someone to share it with."
Isolde looked down at her shoes.
"To take some of the attention.
I understand entirely. Though there had never been enough attention in the circle of the world to satisfy Savine.
The Lord's Round.
Isolde stared at the huge doors. Beyond, they could hear the vague murmur of the gathering witnesses, almost as many as had witnessed Wetterlant's trial.
So many people watching.
Everyone who's anyone. Savine had spent several hours poring over the guest list with Zuri and her mother in order to make absolutely sure of it.
The king is here,
whispered Isolde. Savine found her nonchalance slipping a little at that.
Yes. Do you know him?
We have met. He is a good man, regardless of what you hear.
My husband-to-be doesn't seem to think so.
For some reason, that caused Savine a stab of anger. Luckily, I am not obliged to agree with Lord Isher.
I am,
said Isolde in a tiny voice. By the fates, her eyes were already brimming again, making her powder run. It can be pleasant to have someone weak leaning on you. It can make you feel strong. But there comes a point when they become a dead weight to carry. Savine was happy to play big sister, but she drew the line at motherhood. She would have her own child to worry about soon enough. You are being married to the man, she said, less gently now, not sold to him.
I suppose.
Isolde took a heavy breath.
I wish I had your grit.
Savine was far from sure that grittiness was the quality most sought for in a bride. She took Isolde by her limp little hands.
Act as if everything is going exactly according to your plans, as if you are the most confident person in the world, as if you never had a doubt in your life.
Savine forced her shoulders back, her chin up, and faced the door.
It works for me.
Does it?
Asked Isolde.
Really?
Savine paused a moment, mouth half open, then she slipped the box of pearl dust from her sleeve and offered it out.
There's always this.
Ready, my friend? Asked Isher. Leo forced a watery smile towards High Justice Bruckle, standing by to officiate, his robes trimmed with so much fur he looked like a giant, disapproving badger.
Can't wait.
Leo had always reckoned himself the bravest man in any company. They called him the Young Lion, after all. But standing here on the marble floor of the Lord's Round, well-dressed, well-fed, well-attended, and in no danger of violent death, he was terrified. There are different kinds of courage, maybe, and the kind that lets you fling yourself into a thicket of spears has nothing to do with the kind that lets you stand smiling in front of 1,000 people and give your life to a woman you hardly know. He wished his friends were there, his real friends. Antaup, with his endless chatter about women, and Glawood, with his endless chatter about weapons, and Whitewater Gin, with his beard and his belly laugh, and good old Durand, most of all. Durand, with his caution and good sense. Durand, with his endless patience and support. Durand, with the fine shape of his jaw, and his hair falling in that artless mess, and the perfect definition of his lips. Leo shook himself. He even wished he could hear Barnava wax on about the horrors of war one more time, but, as if to prove his own point, the poor bastard had got himself killed in a war. And none of them were invited anyway. There had been no time to send for them. Leo had come to Adua to attend Lord Isher's wedding and make new friends, not to make an enemy of the king and get bloody married himself. He felt another surge of nerves. Could you call it cowardice? He found he was glancing about for some route of escape, more little rabbit than young lion. He caught sight of his mother, who gave him an encouraging nod. Then Lady Ardy, who gave him an encouraging wink. Then her husband, the Archlector, who gave him a bitter glare, which entirely undid all the lady's support. Finally, King Orso, slouching on his cushions in the middle of the front row, jaw angrily clenched. Leo turned his back on them, mouthing the over-rehearsed apology Savine had arranged for him to give later.
Your Majesty, I'm a soldier,
not a courtier, a simple soldier. I can only apologize. I let my passions get the better of me. No excuse will never happen again.
Please rise,
bellowed Bruckle. There was a rustling as the hundreds of witnesses stood, an echoing fanfare from the gallery, garlanded with spring flowers, and a mighty creaking as the doors were heaved open and the two brides stepped into the light. Whenever Leo saw Savine, she was somehow more than he remembered. But now, in 10,000 marks or more of Suljuk silk, Osprian lace, and pearls from the distant Thousand Isles, advancing so proudly, so gracefully, so dauntlessly down the aisle, he couldn't take his eyes away. No one could. The future Lady Isher was a simpering little girl by comparison, the blushing maid beside the peerless empress. Savine was doing her best not to outpace her, to hold her hand, to show her off to best advantage, but poor Isolde was utterly upstaged at her own wedding. It didn't help that she appeared to be constantly suppressing an urge to sneeze. It was as if all these people were the setting of the ring in which Savine was the jewel, as if the Lord's Round had been built especially for this moment. Perhaps you can borrow courage from someone else. As Savine joined him at the high table, Leo's doubts were wiped away. With her at his side, there was nothing he couldn't do. He was the young lion again. She gave him a look up and down, nodded approvingly, and raised one perfectly plucked brow.
You came, then? Are you joking?
Leo turned to the High Justice and gave him a grin worthy of a famous hero.
I wouldn't miss this for the world.
The spring sun shone on the park, turning every dewdrop to a diamond. Dappled shade danced on the manicured lawns under trees that had been ancient in Casimir's reign. A gentle breeze brought only the slightest scratch in the throat from the chimneys that towered over the Agriant on every side. Everything crisp and bright and ready to burst forth with new possibilities. Lady Finri Dan Brock and Lady Ardi Dan Glockter, mothers to one of the happy couples, glided about the gathering arm in arm, an all-conquering double act, the one imposing military precision on the serving staff, the other administering risque anecdotes to every guest. So many different styles of laughter, hearty guffaws and bubbling chuckles from the gentlemen, silvery giggles and tinkling titters from the ladies. A truly wonderful time was being had by all. With one notable exception, of course. Orso would rather have been anywhere else. The dungeons of the Emperor of Gurkle held more appeal at that moment. It was hard to imagine greater torture, after all, than the glorious wedding of the woman he loved to a man he decidedly didn't, where the guests consisted of a range of sneering enemies, bowing and scraping to his face, then spitting scorn as soon as he was out of earshot. With every day that passed, he was coming to understand, even to admire, his father more. The man had played the eternally losing hand of being king about as well as was possible. He lifted his glass and glumly watched the way the sunlight sparkled through it. The oblivion of the bottle, then. Wine had never let him down. More importantly, he had never let it down.
Your Majesty?
It was one of the grooms, not the one he hated, the one he utterly despised, Lord fucking Isher, even more immaculately polished than usual.
I wish to give you my unreserved apology for the events in the Open Council. I am devastated. Who could have known that Lady Wetterland would renege on her commitments and turn on us both?
Orso had spent a great deal of time pointlessly rehearsing the events of that day, and, though he could prove nothing, he strongly suspected Isher had orchestrated the whole thing. To Lady Wetterland he blamed Orso. To Orso he blamed Lady Wetterland. Then he teased out Leo Dan Brock's little performance and imagined he would come through greatly empowered and still everybody's friend. The desire to punch him in the face was almost irresistible. But breaking his treacherous nose in front of several hundred guests, though satisfying for a moment, would only have played into Isha's hands, and also had done that quite enough already. Plainly, Isha thought him an utter fool. Better he keep doing so.
"You have nothing to apologize for."
Orso tossed his empty glass into the bushes and folded Isha in a tight embrace.
"I know you did everything you could. Those bloody Wetterlands stabbed us both in the back."
He held Isha at arm's length and smiled, smiled, smiled.
"Some dogs are a danger to everyone, have to be put down for the general good. And you can hardly be blamed for Lord Brock's outburst, although he most certainly could be and most certainly was." "The man has a soldier's temperament," said Isha. "I know how desperately he wants to apologize for his behavior."
"Not everyone is a politician, eh? Heart of a lion and so forth. It's a shame how things went, but, ah."
And also snatched two glasses from a passing waiter's tray and pressed one into Isha's hand.
"There's as much need for cooperation between the Crown and Open Council as ever. More. I hope we can work together again to bring it about. This time with a happier outcome.
Such as Isha's neck in the noose rather than Wetterlance, for example.
To your happiness, my friend, and that of your charming bride, of course."
Isha gave a slightly surprised smile.
"Of course."
Their glasses chinked pleasantly together, and also thought about how much he would have loved to smash his in Isha's face and grind the jagged remnant into his groin. But all in good time.
Cheers!
Cages sprang open, and songbirds swarmed into the air above the gardens, a flurry of shimmering blue and purple feathers. Imported from Gurkle, Broad had been told, at a cost he hardly dared imagine. Half had died on the way over. He'd watched them clean the cages out, heaping up the shiny little corpses. May gave a delighted giggle as the survivors twittered sparkling into the sky.
"Beautiful!"
The guests clapped politely and straight away turned to other entertainments. No doubt the birds themselves were meant to loiter in the trees and serenade the newlyweds, but they soon scattered to the wind. Broad doubted they'd last long in this climate. Only one was left on the lawn, weakly cheeping, looking almost as baffled as Broad felt.
"How much did it all cost, you reckon?"
May winked at him. She'd held the books, had one eye on the sums, but she treated the number like a beautiful secret rather than a guilty one.
"Better not to ask."
A lot better, probably. But he couldn't help himself. For what Savine had spent on that one dress, which Liddy would help cut her out of in a few hours, and she'd never wear again, she could have paid her workers on the canal more than they'd asked for and got the thing dug without one bone broken. For what her father, the Archlector, had spent on the wine today, maybe he could have built some better houses in Valbeck, and folk wouldn't have been stuck in rotten cellars, and the breakers wouldn't have risen up, and 200 good people wouldn't have been hanged. For what Lord fucking Isha had spent on this dinner for 700, the valley Broad grew up in could have been left as it was. He could have been herding now the way his father had, along with all those others thrown off their land. Was he the only one who saw it? Was he the only one worried about it? Or was everyone like him? They saw and they worried, but they somehow didn't fucking do anything.
"Doesn't she look beautiful?" murmured Liddy, watching Savine Dan Brock sweep past with her husband,
envious lords and ladies swarming after them like the tail to a comet.
"Aye," said Broad, pushing his lenses up his nose.
She did look beautiful. Everything looked beautiful, even them. He'd never seen his wife and his daughter look so fine, so well-fed, so happy. It's easy to scream about the fence when you're on the wrong side of it. Some mad twist of fortune lands you on the right side, though, the fence starts to look like it might not be such a bad idea, might even be worth all the sacrifices,
other people's sacrifices aren't that hard to make.
All worth it, eh?
Said Liddy. She was talking about the night she'd spent stitching by candlelight, he reckoned, not the nights he'd spent beating men by lamplight. Had that been worth it?
Aye,
he croaked out. He forced the smile onto his face. He was doing that a lot lately. Leo sat watching his wife dance, whirl, twist, smile, flitting effortlessly from one partner to another. His wife. Just thinking the words gave him a guilty thrill. She was an enchanting dancer, it hardly needed to be said. Leo would have liked to join her and soak up his share of the admiration, but he'd never been much of a dancer, even without the leg wound. Few soldiers are. Antalp, maybe. He wondered what his friends would say when he presented his bride. Speechless, most likely. How could they be anything but impressed? How could anyone?
Not dancing, Your Grace?
It was that woman with the red hair and all the bosom he'd met last time he was in Adua. The leg, you know, still a bit sore.
A shame. I can't remember such a spectacular wedding. Thank you.
A moment of horror at not knowing her name, then a wash of relief as it came to him.
Celeste, so glad you could come. Oh, Bias could have locked me in the house of the Maker, and I'd still have found a way to attend.
She tapped him on the chest with her fan.
That's two wonderful shows you've put on in the Lord's Round.
Leo winced.
You know about the other one? My dear, everyone knows about the other one. Well, I'm meeting the king later this evening. I'll say sorry, and that'll be that.
Of course.
I suppose there was always going to be some friction between you and His Majesty, given his history with your wife.
Leo felt a coldness creeping up his spine.
What? Rumour has it they were lovers,
she purred.
But I'm sure Savine told you. It's hardly the kind of secret one would want hanging over a marriage, after all.
The music struck a false note suddenly. Was that why Savine had been so worried about the king's feelings, so keen for Leo to apologize? He felt a surge of fury, and the pain in his leg as he leaned towards Celeste Ann Huygen only made it worse. He forced the words hissing through his fixed smile.
If I hear you've spread that rumour, I'll break your fucking nose.
She looked rather pleased with that, one of those people who count anything but being ignored as a victory.
There's really no point getting angry with me, Your Grace. I didn't fuck the king.
She left him sitting, watching his wife dance, whirl, twist, smile, flitting effortlessly from one partner to another. The sight no longer filled him with quite the same delight. It was done. It was done and could not be undone. Orso drained yet another glass, wondering if there was some kind of drinking record he could aim for, something to give his life purpose, something more than staring at Savine and thinking about all he'd lost. He glanced over to Brock, who for some reason appeared to be frowning angrily back, and raised his empty glass in a pointless toast. That bastard was everything Orso wasn't. Honest, decisive, likable. Crushingly popular with both nobles and commoners, a storybook hero with no crowd of mistakes at his back. Unless you counted the one he'd made in the Lord's Round, the one he was apparently so very keen to apologize for, and that only appeared to have gilded his reputation. Hot-blooded and passionate, don't you know? Anyone would have thought the most admirable thing a man could do in open council these days was berate the monarch.
Blame sticks to some men, he murmured under his breath. Others it slides right off.
Dinner will be served shortly, Your Majesty. A powdered footman gestured towards his chair, the largest chair, of course, in the very centre of the great polished horseshoe of table. He wondered how many trees had died to make it possible. If it please your Majesty, you are to be seated between the two brides, the grooms just without to either side. And he managed to back away and bow simultaneously. Between the two brides, as though to emphasize how alone he was. He would rather have been seated between the great wolf and the snake of Tarlins, far rather. He did not have nearly so ugly a history with them as he had with Savine Danglocter. He realized he had to correct himself. Savine Danbrock. Fuck! He snarled. He could stand it no longer. He could stand himself no longer.
Gorst! Your Majesty! Where might we find Corporal Tunney these days?
The Lord Governor of Bloody Angland could apologize later if he cared to.
I think I've had quite enough of other people's happiness.
Savine shut the doors and leaned back against them, taking a moment to breathe. Her cheeks burned from the dancing and the compliments and the endless smiling and the ever greater quantities of pearl dust. She could hardly feel her face anymore. She simply had to get some air.
So, a married woman.
The sight of her father soon cleared her spinning head. He sat in his wheeled chair on the terrace, deep-lined face tipped back, gazing at the stars.
They say it's the proudest day of a father's life.
They say all sorts of nonsense. His opinion had meant everything to her once, but she found right now she hardly cared. She was eager to shrug off the wreckage of her past life like a snake sheds its skin and sweep away smiling towards her bright new future.
There is no guide to being a parent, Savine.
He turned his head slowly to look at her, eyes bright in the darkness.
Especially if your parents did as poor a job as mine and your mother's did. You reel from one mess to another and chart the only course you can see at the time. We meant to tell you the truth, but when is the right moment to share a thing like that? We preferred the pretense. We did not want to hurt you.
She gave a bitter snort.
Then congratulations on your spectacular failure.
Hardly my first. One day, I hope you will see that we always tried to act in your best interests.
You could have warned me.
Not to bed the Crown Prince. Hardly advice someone of your talents should need.
Perhaps he had a point there.
Besides, we agreed long ago that I would give you some privacy. How was I to know you would become involved with the one man who was off limits?
And from what my mother tells me, it does rather run in the family.
A silence, and she saw the side of his face twitch in the warm light from the party, and he reached up and wiped a streak of wet from his leaking left eye.
Well, a life without regrets is not a life at all. It is in the past now. I know I cast a long shadow, Savine. I am glad you are ready to step out from under it. Just be careful.
Aren't I always?
You will move in different circles now, as the Lady Governor of Angland, no less.
I'm used to hard decisions.
It felt as if her life had been one after another.
You are used to business. This is politics. The way things are going, well, take care. And promise me one thing.
He beckoned her close to whisper,
have nothing to do with Baez. Not with him, not with any Magus. Take no favours from him, owe no debts to him, make no deals with him. Do not please him, do not displease him. Do everything possible to escape his notice altogether. Promise me.
All right, she said, frowning. I promise.
If she was to have a statue on the Kingsway, she supposed she would have to win it for herself.
Good. Good.
Her father winced as he settled into his chair, drunken applause in the background as a dance came to its end.
The time may soon come when I cannot protect you any more.
Is that what you've been doing?
Believe it or not, I've been trying.
He frowned over the rooftops towards the dome of the Lord's Round, the great black shape soaring high into the night sky, a grand replacement for the one destroyed the year Savine was born.
Sometimes, he murmured, the only way to improve something is to destroy it so it can be rebuilt better. Sometimes, to change the world, we must first burn it down.
Savine raised one brow.
Valbec may be better in the years to come, but being there while it burned was far from pleasant.
The Emperor's prisons were far from pleasant.
He licked at his empty gums with a faint sucking.
But I emerged a better man. Being your father is the thing I am proudest of. It's the only thing I'm proud of.
And you're not even my father.
She wanted to strike some spark of anger from him, but all he did was slowly nod, a trace of a smile as he looked up at the stars, bright in the clear sky.
That should tell you what I think of everything else I've done.
Beyond the windows, the band struck up a jaunty reel, one of her mother's favourites, people clapping and stamping and laughing in time.
Could you wheel me back in?
She thought about wheeling him off into the flower beds, but in the end she took the handles of his chair and turned it about, that one wheel slightly squeaking.
I can do that,